This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
All right, thanks for coming on. Everybody, as I said, this is Ryan McGee, head of, I guess you could say just head of recruiting for Gamers Baseball Academy and Untamed Baseball. Is that accurate? Is that like a good title?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
So basically, this is an episode we've been talking about doing for a little while. Kind of want to have you on and just talk, you know, all the ins and outs of the recruiting process for, and, you know, give some insight for athletes and parents, you know, on that side of things, and, you know, get some, I guess, tips from you on all that kind of stuff. So I think that'd be helpful for a lot of the athletes who are listeners.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to join you on your show and looking forward to talking over the next little bit.
Yeah, happy to have you on. So I guess the first thing I wanted to touch on was your college career. Caldwell University, for anyone who doesn't know, that it's a D2 program in New Jersey. And I guess like a little bit of like your recruiting experiences through high school and into college.
Yeah, sure. So I was a Long Island kid, grew up by JFK Airport out there. Back in, played high school in the late 90s. So as you can imagine, recruiting was a little bit different than probably it is now. And I'm sure we'll touch on it in a little bit. It was more, you know, people coming out and seeing games. You know, it wasn't the technology wasn't really around back then. So I was lucky enough to play for a pretty good summer team that we went to a lot of tournaments. And through that summer team, I ended up being seen by, at the time, Chris Reardon, who was assistant coach at St. John's, and then would eventually become the head coach at Caldwell, and then got me over, recruited me over to Caldwell.
Cool.
And then at Caldwell. Yeah, I mean, my biggest thing for my recruiting thing was I got recruited by a lot of the local D2 schools on Long Island. My biggest thing was going somewhere where, one, I wanted to go away, and two, somewhere where I knew I was going to have a pretty good shot at playing more years than not.
Yeah.
So Caldwell offered that opportunity. Beautiful area for anyone that's not been there. Beautiful area coming from, you know, JFK Airport, New York train system. Neighbor going to Caldwell, New Jersey was a change, a lot quieter place.
Yeah, it's like city to suburbs type of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned, you know, the differences with the technology and all that kind of stuff, like, you know, getting looked at by some local schools. Like, that's really all there, you know, was to it back then, right? Like, it was just, you know, people who could go out to see you locally. That was, like, who you talked to and who you got looked at.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the school's reaches probably were nowhere near what they were now, what they are now. Like, you're right. It was more, you know, we had played, there was a pretty good summer league with, you know, 8 to 10, you know, elite travel teams out in Long Island and Queens that attracted a lot of good of the city players. So attracted a lot of the, you know, the St. John's, the Hofstra's, the Stony Brook's, and then on top of all the D2 programs out there. But it was more, like you said, more local based, you know, as much as we had dreams to go probably down south, and you had to be a super stud to get your name across, because there was no, I think back then they took videos and put them on DVDs and they would,
you would like mail them out, right?
So, yeah, actually physically mail them out.
That's
so
crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure those coaches got flooded with envelopes of a million DVDs.
Yeah, I
so
mean,
it was hard to leave your area, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, that's crazy, but like I think the way it is now kind of really only burst onto the scene maybe like 7 or 8 years ago. It's just like even so much, like I'm only 24 years old and so much has changed, you know, since 2010 when I was going through the process. Like I can imagine, you know, saying 20, 25 years ago, 15 years ago, like it's just times are, it's moving quickly and a lot of things are changing for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, I think we'll get into it. I'm sure it's a blessing and a curse in a sense. Back then it was, you know, you got a lot of eyes on you, like physically eyes on you, not, you know, watching over a computer screen. So I think it had its benefits and, you know, also obviously its cons as well.
Yeah, for sure. So like, take us, you know, briefly through your playing career. For listeners, you played with a couple, well, you know, maybe you could describe the situation best, but a couple of your current colleagues in the, you know, the coaching world and guys that I work with as well, Hassani, Mike, you guys, were you there at the same time? I don't remember exactly what the years.
Yeah, so actually, Sonny, Mike, and John and I, you know, the four of us over at Gamers Academy, we've actually known each other and played with each other or for the same travel organization since we were 15.
Okay.
So obviously, we went through the whole travel ball circuit together. Lucky enough, you know, nothing planned or whatever, but it happened to be Sonny committed to Caldwell first, then Mike committed to Caldwell, and a couple months later, I ended up going to Caldwell. So we were lucky enough, three of us got to go to Caldwell together, come in the same recruiting class, play all 4 years together, have a pretty good run at Caldwell. We made the conference tournament all 4 years, the conference finals, tournament championship three out of the 4 years, and an NCAA regional our junior year, so 1 year.
Yeah, that was...
we had a pretty good run.
Yeah, for sure.
And then a couple years later, you know, Hassani and John decided to open up Gamers. Got you know, myself and Mike involved, and pretty much is... up to date, you know, for the last 10 years, or is it 9 years now?
Yeah.
I've been going after that.
You mentioned, like, I actually didn't even know this. You spent 2 years at Caldwell as a coach after you were done playing, correct?
Yeah. So after I got done, I graduated from Caldwell, done playing. I ended up getting a job doing some IT work in one of the departments at Caldwell.
Okay.
So I started working there. I was just working, and then a year and a half after I was working there, an assistant coaching job opened. Coach Reardon, who was my coach, was still there at the time, approached me about helping out. So I ended up going back for about a season and a half before I left for my full-time job now. So the year and a half, we actually went to a regional. So I got, you know, almost the best of both worlds. I got to experience it as a player, then also experience it again. I think it was 2007 or 8. As a coach as well. So that was a pretty cool experience seeing it from the other side.
Yeah. Did you do any of like the recruiting stuff, I guess, like in the opposite sense of like what you do now, trying to get kids to college? Did you do anything at the time with Caldwell, or was it just strictly like assistant stuff?
No, I did a little bit of the recruiting. I mean, Coach Reardon handled the majority of it, but you know, talking about how times have changed, this was 2007, 2008. I was the handwritten note letter coach. You know, I would handwrite notes, mail them out, you know, to prospective athletes.
That's crazy.
I'm going to try to see where their interest was. And my big thing that, you know, Coach Reardon utilized me for as far as with the recruiting was, obviously, I went to Caldwell for 4 years. I was a player there. So I gave a lot of the tours around campus and kind of was able to know the ins and outs and could relate to the high school senior visiting the campus
and
kind of give that student athlete perspective.
So yeah, for sure.
I think that was a good role for me, I'm sure.
Yeah, you mentioned the handwritten letters. It's crazy to think, like, yeah, like I know in 2007, 2008, obviously email existed, but like it was the access wasn't there. Like not every or no high school kids were running around with a laptop or a phone that could just email coaches back and forth. It was just like you said, you were exactly sending letters to the house.
Yeah, and if a family would have one email address for the whole family.
Yeah.
You know, probably back then. It wasn't like now where every kid has probably multiple email addresses.
And they're all like communicating with the coaches on their own mostly. Like the parents are pretty much told to stay out of the process, really.
Yeah, I mean, more coaches that I talk to from the college level now, they prefer that. I mean, realistically, they're recruiting the kid.
Yeah.
They want to know what kind of individual they're recruiting. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong, the parents play a factor in it, and parents sometimes, more times than not, have a negative effect on the recruiting experience. But mainly, they want to get to know the individual that they're recruiting, investing in, and make sure that's someone they want to go down that full road with.
Yeah. Like, maybe, like, you know, you would know more, obviously way more about this than I do, but the parents kind of maybe come in, like, later in the process, like, if they're, you know, realizing that, you know, this is going to be a fit for them. Like, that's kind of more so when the parents get involved, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when they take tours of the campus, obviously, you know, parents want to make sure they're sending their kids somewhere for 4 years, that they're going to be comfortable with the coaching staff that they're sending their kids with, the community that the school's in. And then, obviously, when it gets down to the financial time, you know, a lot of the parents, you know, know me or involved at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, first and foremost, the kid has to, you know, the kid has to want to play at the school, want to attend the school for academics, and has to get along and have a good rapport with the coaching staff before. If he doesn't, then it doesn't matter, you know, what the parents think, because you don't want the parents to force. A college coach doesn't want the parents to force a kid to go there if the kid doesn't really want to be there.
Yeah, for sure. Then it's like a recipe for disaster for, you know, I would say 4 years, but if it even lasts one at that point.
Yeah, no, true.
Okay, so you get this job at Caldwell, assistant, and then you end up, like you said, you leave, you take your the full-time IT job. What really, like, obviously, you know, your friends, Hassani and John, start Gamers Baseball Academy, and you had this brief experience with the recruiting. What really pushed you to make, like, that full leap to, like, this is what I do, like, I'm the recruiting guy, so to speak. Like, what was that process like?
Yeah, no, I mean, they obviously first started with asking to come on, do lessons, coach, and get my foot in the door kind of in that world. Son and I coached a little bit together before Gamers, but, you know, I was, you know, one of the main coaches there originally. So then it just came down to need, really. I mean, John at that time was the head coach at Union County College, Sonny being his assistant. And, you know, I think the first year Gamers opened, we had a 10, 12, 14, and 18U team.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the 18U players were high school juniors and seniors. Some of them with places to go, some of them were not places to go. So it kind of just came by a need with those guys already being college coaches. I was the other guy standing there. So, all right, I'll help you guys try to get into school. I mean, coming from coaching at Caldwell, I knew a little bit about the recruiting world, knew some other coaches. So I was like, all right, yeah, I'll help you guys. And it kind of just started like that, like organically, like just trying to help. And then over the next couple of years, as I, you know, got my feet going a little bit with the recruiting world and learned more about it and how it works, you know, then it turned into more of a process, more than just, like, I don't want to say hobby is the wrong word, but, you know, more of a process where we knew what we were doing, not just trying to help out, lend a helping hand.
Yeah. All right. So I date, like, year wise, we're what, like 2010 at this point when you start up there?
10 or 11, somewhere.
Okay. So just knowing this from, because, like, that was honestly right around the time where I was a junior in 2011. So, and we've talked about this. I had one of those profiles on NCSA.
Yep.
So, you know, you're just getting started out with those initial kids. Like, in your role, what was the process like in terms of reaching out to coaches? Obviously, like, again, even over the last 8 or 9 years, things have changed tremendously. Like, you had, let's say, a pitcher that you thought had, like, a lot of potential. Were you just, like, you emailing personally, like, some of these coaches, or, like, writing to them? Like, how are you going about this?
You're talking about 2010?
Yeah, like, I guess at that point now, like, emails more mainstream. Like, you're just, like, shooting emails out to these guys saying, like, hey, yeah, I have a guy.
Yeah, pretty much shooting emails. We have a guy, you know, whatever, you know, obviously emailing the proper coaches who have fit the player's skill set.
Yeah, so you had to determine all that, too.
Yeah, so you got to determine where the player fits. Obviously, you want to put the player where he's going to have the best chance to succeed and help a program, you know, and obviously help the program, bring in a player that's going to help them. So finding out the players, where they fit, and then going about, like you said, emailing, picking up a phone and calling them. At that time, 2010, 2012, whenever it was, you know, there was some recruiting sites that we currently use now, like we currently use now, but I don't think it was, like, as developed as it is now. So
yeah.
I know at some point we got involved. I'm not sure the year. We were probably one of the first organizations or one of them that pretty much got involved at a software called Field Level.
Mm-hmm.
That we still use to this day. And it's basically a platform. We get our players on there. We build profiles. And then we could promote out to coaches across the country. So we kind of migrated to that on top of the email and text messages and phone calls.
Yeah, you've shown me that, and I just was like I said, again, more about, like, how quickly things have changed. Like, from when I was going through the process, that Field Level is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Field Level for me, probably because we were there from pretty much when they were starting. I think they were just doing baseball and one other sport. Now they do almost every sport that's offered in a high school level. It's a great tool. I mean, I'm connected to now, I think, over like 3,200 coaches from all different levels, from JUCO, NAIA, to the NCAA levels, all across the country. So it goes back to when we talked about like my recruiting process where it was more localized. Now, you know, we could get a kid from New Jersey at least seen from schools in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know if they'll be fits or not. That's a whole nother story. But at least now they can get their eyes on a video. And then if schedules match up where they want to come see a kid that bad, you know, that if that's in the works. That'll happen later down the road.
Yeah, for sure. It's just these guys, like I try to tell them, like when, you know, I'm working with them, how lucky they are to, one, not only have you. Like, I think it's just an awesome thing. Like, I think I've told you this. I've told some of our guys, like, that, you know, we work with having someone that goes to bat for you to, you know, push you out there and expose. Like, you've had some great success with some of the guys. Like, even, you know, guys like, you know, Jason Gonzalez, Caleb Carter, like, two guys that just committed to D1 schools this year. Like, getting them out there, it's like, you don't realize how important that is. Like, and like I tell them all the time, like having somebody like that, if like if an athlete's listening, like getting someone like that to kind of push you out there and show you the way to do it is so important.
Yeah. It can be overwhelming for student athletes and their families for sure. So I'm lucky enough where I've been doing it now for a while. I went through it as a student athlete, and what I could at least help to calm the student athletes and their families down, I hope I do a good enough job for them to at least make the process easy as it can be.
Yeah, for sure. You know, again, it's more on speaking of the process and everything. Speaking of like some strategies or maybe like your style in trying to, you know, highlight the best attributes of the players you're trying to, you know, get to the next level. Like, what are some things you look to do in terms of, you know, highlighting their abilities?
Okay, yeah. So first and foremost, we have to internally evaluate our players or any student athlete that we're working with. So we like to run them through, obviously, for baseball, the 60-yard dash, their velos at their positions, if they're pitchers, you know, secondary, third pitches, catcher pop times, all that good stuff. So we have to evaluate them. And then based on our experience with other student athletes, my communication with schools and kind of knowing what players they go after, kind of put them in some kind of range of where, you know, D1, D2, D3, JUCO, all that good stuff. And then once we determine that, we kind of then have to sit down with the player and their family and find out what are their desirables. What do they want? You know, what they want to go close to home. They want to go far away. What they want to study. What big school, small school. Price range. How much are they comfortable coming out of pocket with school? Because the misconception is people look at football or some other basketball at the college level would have a lot more funds.
Yeah.
Baseball, you're lucky if you go to a baseball program that's fully funded. So chances are you're not getting a 100% baseball scholarship. That's just not traditional in the sport, in the collegiate level. So
what is the number on that? Like, isn't it like, what, 7.5 or something?
No, I think it's not.
Or 9, it's something like that.
No, I think D1's 11.3.
11, okay.
D2 with the fully funded is 9 point something. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. But
which is crazy considering the size of a roster. That's like the size of a roster. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and I believe, I don't know if the rule will change or not, but I believe NCAA Division I schools have to carry 2 or 3 players on their roster that get 0 athletic funded. So there's all these little quirks and rules that NCAA throws in that obviously they have to, the Division I programs, Division II programs have to juggle. But not many programs take away by your Power 5 conferences. Not many programs, especially any level not D1, is fully funded.
So
chances are you're not getting 100% athletic scholarship. So what's coming out of pocket? Are you a good student? You know, is that school a school that traditionally gives out a lot of athletic academic money? So trying to, you know, I relate a lot to my parents that I talk with student athletes of buying a house. When you buy a house, you go in with, you know, what you want and what you really need. What are you willing to
yeah?
What are you willing to, you know, bend on, and what's must have?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I approach it to them with schools. All right, so let's sit down, blank piece. What do you really want in the school? And what would you like to have that, all right, if we start cross someone off that don't fit, you can live with. So that's kind of how I go about it with the from our side, with our player and parents. Then as far as once we get all that information, we start building a list of actual schools that could be fits.
Yeah.
And then as far as we put videos together, highlighting their best attributes. You know, if they're a fast guy, we're going to make sure that, you know, they're 60s front and center in the video because, you know, let's be honest here, coaches get 1,000 videos. If you don't catch their eye probably in the first 25, 30 seconds, there's a good chance they're on to the next one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So when we try to do our videos, we try to put their best attribute first.
Yeah.
In the video. So it catches their eyes, and if they like what they see, there's a better chance they're going to get to minute, you know, 25 seconds of that video rather than on to the next one after 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to keep our videos all from 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, maybe max, short and sweet. Cause no one's going to get a scholarship off a video. It's just catch your eye, pique some interest, open up the dialogue of communication. And then hopefully the relationship grows from there.
Yeah. Just like you said, it's opening the door and, you know, giving that chance at, you know, some exposure and like building that relationship. So I think that point you made about, you know, keeping the video or making the video where the first 20 or so seconds has something that'll catch the eye is just super important and something I think a lot of people miss out on or don't understand, for sure.
Yeah, like if we had a kid a couple years ago, Frankie Lehman, he's actually at Caldwell now, funny enough, but he was a 6'5 to 6'7, 60 guy. Like if we, and he, you know, he was a decent hitter, but his best attribute was he was a super athlete and he could, you know, he could run. So we put his 60, we made sure his 60 was first. If you put his 60 after hit and after defense, some schools might never even see him run and might never know, you know, how he could move.
Yeah.
So that was just our approach at it and how we like to do it, because we like to, one, highlight their best attribute, and two, if we could catch their eye and, you know, keep them on their eyes on the video as long as possible, that's only going to work and hopefully our benefit.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so we're hitting on, you know, things you want to do with, you know, the video strategies you use, stuff like that, and kind of getting towards like what coaches are looking for. So a good segue for that. Like in your experience and what you've seen, like what are, you know, some of the bigger things that these coaches are looking for when it comes to their recruiting process and the players they're going after?
Yeah, first and foremost, college coaches, everyone I talk to, normally the first two questions out of their mouth is, what kind of student is he and what kind of human is he?
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, they want high character guys. They want guys that are going to handle their business on and off the field, more importantly, handle their business in the classroom, so they're not a disturbance or a headache to their program, right? The last thing a college coach wants to do is worry about you passing your classes or even attending your classes.
Yeah, he wants, they have enough to worry about. Hey,
yeah, you're a big boy. You're away from mom and dad. You're going to wake up for your 8 a.m. class, your 6 a.m. lift. Like, there's no worries there. So that's first and foremost. They want to recruit the individual. They want to make sure they're getting, like I said, a high-character guy. Second, obviously, depending, you know, each level, they're looking for athletes. You have to be an athlete, you know. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but NCAA publishes a lot. 500-something thousand high school baseball players, I think 6% or something, somewhere around there, play college at any level. And then obviously you divvy up that 6% by level. D1, which I know is a big thing these days, is only like 1.2% out of that 6%.
Yeah.
So if you want to play a college sport in baseball, you have to be in the 6% of that 500,000 number. So you have to be an athlete. Then obviously it varies program to program. Pitchers, obviously velo, location, position players. These days with all the development with swinging, you know, each coaches have different philosophies, so they're looking for different things. So it's kind of, you know, specialized per program, how they like to run it. Are they hit run programs? Are they, you know, swing for the fences type programs? So it kind of varies program to program what their specific attributes they're looking for. But like I said, student athlete, students, high character individuals, and just being an athlete in general. Obviously, in my opinion, that's what pretty much everyone's looking for.
Yeah, we mentioned Hassani a couple times, and obviously he's the head coach at Caldwell now. And I've spoken to him a couple times. Like, I've shown a couple guys to him, and he mentions, you know, wow, like, great athlete. Like, you know, we can take that guy and develop him. You know, would you say that's something you see a lot too, where coaches, you know, really place emphasis on that athleticism because they feel like they can maybe sharpen a guy or get him to where they need him to be?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're an athlete. Coaches could, you know, you might be a smaller guy now, but they could fix a couple things in your swing. You know, they could fix your delivery. But if you're athletic enough, you have good athletic motions and movements, you're easily, you know, you'll adapt to any changes or philosophies they might introduce to you.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the mindset. If you're more on the non-athletic side and maybe just a good baseball player, but you're going to have a market and schools are going to want that and they're going to probably like you as a player, but you almost become less attractive for someone that doesn't maybe agree with the or has different views on the way that you currently play the game.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes you might not adapt or
– or have as much projectability.
Exactly. So, yeah. So the better – more free you are and athletic you are, definitely the more attractive you become.
Yeah, it just – I guess it kind of increases your room for error, so to speak.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, listen, if they're recruiting a player, they're investing money in them, they're going to do whatever – they could do to get whatever production they could get out of that player. So, yeah. So, like you said, less margin for error. They, you know, they could find a need for you. They could find a use for you.
Yeah. You know, mentioning, you know, right fit and sitting down and being realistic. And we've shared some stories about, you know, guys that are, you know, parents even that aren't very realistic in terms of, you know, where they should be looking. What's your biggest piece of advice, or maybe like a statement, however you want to say it, for, you know, players and parents who get, you know, hung up on that D1 or bust mentality?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. I like to think it's more in our area than not. It's probably I feel it's more, like, I've dealt with some Florida kids for recruiting. And it seems to be more of a Northeast attitude where it's like D1, I need to go D1.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I never thought about that, but that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, I dealt with kids from Florida, and they were like, I'll go play anywhere. The mindset.
Yeah, who's going to give me time
I think that mindset is more of a Northeast thing, and I think, you know, a big factor of that is kids aren't educated, and families aren't educated on the Division II and Division III programs that are out there. In our area specifically, there's very good Division II programs, excellent D3 programs that compete at the regional level, and some of them even, you know, they make the College World Series.
Yeah.
But sometimes you talk to kids and you tell them a D2 program 30 minutes away from their house, and they've never heard of it. So I don't know if that's bad marketing on the school's part, the college's part, the high school guidance counselor's part, the high school. I don't know. Who's to blame or what's the reason behind it, but I just don't think kids are aware of the quality of ball outside the Division I level. And listen, there's good programs and bad programs at every level.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
I talked to our guys about, like, the, you know, because obviously they're 16, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids.
Mm-hmm.
Same, like you said, they come in, you know, with a list of, you know, mainly D1 schools. They'll sprinkle in a couple of D3, D2 schools. And it's like, all right, well, what's going on here? Have you guys looked at the school's rosters that you're putting down here? You see where they recruit. That's a big thing with me. Before you give me a list and come to me with a school, look at that school's roster. Tell me how many kids from Jersey they are.
That's a really good point.
If there's no kids from Jersey there, they probably don't recruit this area heavy.
Yeah.
If there's one kid out of 35 there, and the rest of the kids are from Texas, South Carolina, Florida, all the hotbeds of baseball, that probably tells you that one Jersey kid's probably an absolute stud. Are you at that level?
Yeah, or you're a right-handed pitcher throwing 74.
Yeah, so I try to let the kids be realistic with themselves and do their own due diligence on the programs they're going to come to me and say, can I play here? And a lot more times than not, I have more success with kids answering that own question before I have to answer it for them.
Yeah, go tell them what to look for, and then they could quickly see what, you know, without you having to, you know, be the bearer of bad news.
Yeah, and, you know, every kid is publicized these days, right? PBR, Perfect Game. So go look up at the incoming, you can go look right now on Perfect Game's website and see what kids are committed to what schools.
Mm-hmm.
Go look these guys' metrics. Go look what they top out at, what they run the 60 in, and be honest with yourself. The biggest thing to this whole recruiting process is being honest with yourself of what kind of ball player you are. Are you the best player in your high school? Are you the best player in your county? Are you the best player in the state? If you say yes to all that, then you can start looking at certain programs. If you're no, then we have to, you know, pull it back a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, reassess. Mm-hmm. So for the D1 thing, like, it's great, and kids should strive to play at that level, because why wouldn't you want to dream and strive to play at the highest level you can? But at some point, you have to start being realistic if you want to play college baseball specifically, to know where are you going to play. I mean, the worst thing a kid could do is go somewhere, not play, and then want to transfer out, because that adds a whole another element to the college experience that most kids don't want to go through. Plus, most of the time you lose money out in the deal and credits. Go somewhere where you're going to maximize your play. You get 4 years to play college baseball, and most likely for more kids than not, it's going to be the last 4 years of competitive baseball. So go somewhere where you're going to maximize the return on your investment of time, money, going to a school. Go somewhere where you're going to play 3 out of 4 years, hopefully 4 out of 4 years. Why go to a program where you're going to sit for 3 years, then maybe play? So for me, it's all about the experience. Like, go have a good experience. You know, yeah, it's, I always say it's easy to make, easy is probably the wrong word. It's easier to make a Division I roster than it is to play on a Division I roster.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Every year, Division I programs are bringing studs in. They're bringing the upper level of that high school class in. So every year, you know, it's another battle. It's another battle. Not to say D2, D3 aren't, but if you're a pretty good player, you'll have a higher probability of maximizing, like I said, maximizing your return at the proper level, not, you know, where you want to go.
Yeah.
Almost makes sense. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's like, what good is it to go to that school? Like, yeah, great. You can, you know, kids these days can tweet it out and show their friends, and the parents can be, you know, happy and brag about it. But, like, if you're going there and you're, you know, barely making the roster, barely traveling, doing any of that stuff, like, what good is it doing you?
Yeah, you mean you're going to have a great experience, but you're not going to have as good of experience as if you were the starting third baseman at a regionally ranked NCAA regional participant Division II program.
Yeah, for sure.
You'll, that'll feel more rewarding than being the 30th guy in a 30-man roster at a Division I program just because you wanted to go D1.
Yeah.
It's crazy because I've had families sit down and kids sit down with me and say, I'd rather just go be a student than play Division III baseball. I lose my mind when I hear that. I go, yeah, are you guys kidding me?
That's crazy.
You know what you're gonna give up, the experience you're gonna give up, because you're not getting, you know, D1 looks right now. So, you know, and more times than not, I'm able to get them to see it. You know, but I think like you just touched on, I think these days with the Instagram, the Snapchat, they see all their buddies. They see kids just from all over the country announcing commitments. And, you know, right or wrong, they want that feeling. They want, you know, their 10 minutes of
chasing that quick, you know, instant gratification.
Yeah, they want, you know, they want all the likes. They want their comments. So sometimes I tend to get more caught up in that than making the right decision and the best decision for them.
Yeah, you know, we're mentioning social media and Instagram and all that kind of stuff, and I guess, you know, now's a good time. This, like, we mentioned some tech in the realm of, you know, recruiting services and stuff like that, and I don't want to get, you know, too repetitive, but social media is something that's just important to touch on. Not only, you know, in the light that we just talked about with, you know, how it influences the athletes themselves, but being another place where coaches and athletes can communicate, like Twitter, for example. You know, maybe touch on, like, your experience with some of your guys and what they've had with that. And, you know, you have an account as well, like how you've been able to use it in the recruiting process.
Yeah, so Twitter for me, as far as the recruiting process, is one of the biggest tools. First and foremost, most student athletes are on social media. Definitely keep it clean.
For sure. Don't ruin something for that. Yeah.
You know, I've talked to coaches that have rescinded offers, stopped recruiting kids because of a tweet they put out or Instagram post they put out, because there are compliance officers in every athletic department that part of their role is fishing through prospective student athletes' social media stuff. That goes for parents as well. You know, they're gonna check everybody because ultimately, if you go to that school, you're going to be a reflection on that school's community.
Absolutely.
So first and foremost, obviously keep it clean. Second, kids, it's a great way to get your information, your updates on how you're doing, updated videos out to schools. So most schools now have team accounts. Coaches have individual accounts. And it's much easier now. They just go on the app on their phone. They could be on the bus to a game. They could be, you know, anywhere. You know, quickly check Twitter. Oh, I see this kid. You know, oh, he's got a new video. Let me take a look at it. So it's instant, you know, connectivity with a college coach. For me, it's, you know, once again, it goes back to having the reach. Now, I can connect with a college coach from California on Twitter. You know, we can shoot DMs back and forth. You know, what are you looking for? I always have to find out what they're looking for in class years. All right, what are you guys looking for in your 2020 class?
Yeah.
That way I kind of have an idea. I have an idea. All right, well, they said they're looking for a catcher. Well, I happen to have a catcher. So, you know, shoot them a quick message. Hey, I got, you know, I know you're looking for a 2020 catcher. I happen to have one that I think could be worth your time looking into. And then I'll shoot them over that player's video, and whatever information I have on that player. So it's instant contact connectivity, like I said, even with me, with the schools, and with them, with vice versa. They contact me. It's a coach I never met before, might follow me and shoot me a DM or a message saying, hey coach, you know a little bit about your program. I'm interested in learning more. And, you know, they take the first step almost in a sense and start building that relationship and that connection between, you know, the Untamed organization and their school.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a valuable tool. Obviously, like I said, just to harp on one more time, players, family, you know, make sure you know what you're posting and be responsible with it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, even, you know, personally as a coach, you know, and obviously, you know, having a business, a brand, whatever, it's hand in hand with what we tell the kids, like, you know, if you're using that, you know, platform like Twitter for that purpose in even the slightest bit, like, leave everything you put on there to that specific stuff. Like, don't, you know, get into political things. Don't retweet, you know, funny things you're seeing. Like, just keep it super, you know, business related in the sense of, like, your athletic career, if that's the best piece of advice,
yeah,
I guess.
I mean, players are, they're selling themselves to schools.
It's like another recruiting platform.
They're their own brand. Yeah, they're their own brand. You know, you want to represent the best, you know, reflection of yourself out there to the internet and the hundreds of coaches that might be following you.
Yeah, I mean, like, looking at things like, you know, Flat Ground and, you know, what Pitching Ninja has done, you know, as simple as, yeah, you know, we've gone back and forth before and, like, you would say, hey, I'm posting that video and I have a, you know, good relationship with, you know, Pitching Ninja and some of the accounts on there and being able to just, like, a simple retweet can just, like, I got a DM from somebody, a coach saying, of a school, honestly, that I had never even heard of, saying, hey, like, we saw the guy you retweeted, could you, like, put us in contact with him? And it's just so amazing how easy it is for the coaches, but, like, the players have to realize how lucky they are for that,
yeah,
you know, ease, I guess you could say. We didn't have that.
Rob, Pitching Ninja does a great job. They started that Flat Ground for pitching and hitters now. It's great. I mean, there's thousands of coaches and pro scouts that follow that because of the quality content they retweet. And it's just amazing to think you could tweet out a video of a player, and it doesn't have to come from me. The players can do it themselves. Tweet out, tag them in it, shout, you know, mention them in the tweet. They retweet it, and next you know, you have 10,000-12,000. I don't know how many followers up to now. You know, it's going right to, you know, right to their timeline. So
yeah,
it's pretty amazing to think of, like, And the baseball community, as you know, I mean, the baseball community is small in a sense. You know, it's a everyone, you know, at some point pretty much interacts with each other on some level. So even if I tell my guys all the time, even, you know, coach, it's happened to me plenty of times with our guys, a coach at school A says, hey, he's not a fit for us. We're not looking for that. But my buddy here would definitely be interested with him. And then he forwards that, you know, then he retweets it or he sends it to this guy. It's crazy how things could work.
Yeah. And it's also pretty crazy too. Like, I've had this experience with a couple guys, and I'm sure you have as well, you know, in that same vein of it being a small world. If one school in a certain conference offers you that, you could often get the attention of a couple of the other schools in that same conference.
Yeah. I mean, competitions is a great thing, as I'm sure we all experience and know. You know, you're getting seen by a couple schools, and wind gets out that somehow that it gets out that, you know, you got an offer from a specific school in a conference. Another school in the conference might have been on the fence with you about you, or, you know, maybe you were, you know, the number two at that position on their board. You know, that, you know, there's the friendly competition and the nature of the business could work in your benefit in that sense, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, moving, you know, through social media, you know, some important things that, you know, the athletes want to look for and make sure they're doing the right way, you know, cannot, you know, understate the importance of test scores and grades, like you alluded to before. You know, what are, in your opinion, some of the things that, you know, athletes or some of the ranges that they're going to want to be in to put themselves in a, you know, good position to make sure that they can actually get into some of the schools they're looking at?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the old saying, student, you're a student athlete, student comes first, and student athlete, so be a student. GPA, obviously GPA is important. Definitely, I mean, at bare minimum, I would say you should, in high school, you should be a 2.7, 2.8 at worst. Definitely 3.0 is something to strive to be over. I mean, the higher, obviously 3.2, 3.5 you can make it, the more attractive you come. Best advice I could tell kids is make sure at an early age you do the NCAA Eligibility Center. If you're not aware of kind of what that is, basically you create a profile, you get an NCAA ID number, and then your guidance counselor every semester, every year would have to send in your updated transcripts. And basically just make sure you're on par with taking the right classes. You're taking the right amount of Englishes. You're taking the right amount of social studies, math classes. That way you're not going to graduate and somebody's going to say, well, you're not eligible to play a college sport at Division II level, just say, because you fell one semester short on English class. So it kind of just protects you to make sure you're going to be what they call a fully qualifier when you graduate, and you're going to go into a school and not have to sit out your first fall.
Yeah.
So that's definitely important. I stress to our guys, but I like to have our guys have it done by sophomore year. I think it's about $80 now to do. But it's an important piece. I know NCAA 1 and 2 use it. If you go to a D3 school, you don't really need it. But it could come in, I told my guys the time, it could come in if you end up transferring to a school. You're going to need it if you go to a JUCO and transfer out from a JUCO. Having all that done just makes the process easier. So it's, in my opinion, it's well worth the $80 investment. Like I said, it kind of keeps you academically on track with the NCAA to make sure you're going to be a full qualifier when you graduate high school.
Yeah. Just cover all your bases. Why not, right? Get it done and make sure that you're good to go.
Why not? Yeah. So there's no, you know, I've had horror stories where a JUCO kid that played for us ended up going down to a D1 school in Mississippi, found out the first week he's on campus that he's ineligible because of, you know, being short a certain amount of credits from when he was in high school, even though he was coming from a JUCO. Okay? But because he didn't have his associates, I mean, there's a million things you got to go through. But you know, just to prevent against that kind of stuff when surprises, when you show up to a school, because you won't find that information out until you show up at school.
Yeah. No, it's too late at that point. And
then, yeah, exactly. You're there, right? and then your junior year, when you start taking your tests, you know, obviously your SATs, your ACTs. For SATs, you know, 1,000, you know, is pretty a safe number that pretty much gets you in, or at least can be worked with at, you know, majority of schools. Obviously, if you're looking at a higher academic school, you know, you could probably need to be over that 1,200 mark.
Yeah, especially, like, if you're a borderline, you know, in terms of the baseball sense, like, it make the, you know, academic part, you know, elevated a little bit to give yourself, you know, I guess, a bump in terms of, you know, the ease for the coach to get you in the school or something.
Yeah, I mean, most programs now, the way they do it is they don't give you, they give you percentage packages, right? They tell you you're going to get 60%, 70% to come to the school, and that's going to be baseball and academic kind of rolled into one percentage out of the, you know, out of your whole tuition cost. So the better the student you are, more likely the more academic money you're going to get from that institution, therefore making your overall percentage package better. Like you said, it could be the defining factor of you, player A and player B are on the pretty similar athletic wavelength. But player A is a 3-2, 1100 SAT guy. Player B is a 2-7, 900 SAT guy. Player A is going to have the more attractive package and be less of a risk to the school, because the better student you show you are, yeah, the better student you show you are in high school, the more, you know, confident they'll be with you being able to come in and handle the college workload of being a student athlete, which a lot of people don't fully get and understand the demands of it till you're there.
Yeah. I mean, in my own experience, you know, a guy that was talking to some Patriot League schools and, you know, and I had, you know, really, I think I had a 1290, like I had good, okay, my GPA was pretty solid, but like, you know, you're dealing with a Lehigh or a Lafayette or something like that. And some of these kids, you know, with their scores, if you're not in a position where like they only get, if, correct me if I'm wrong, so many kids per year that they can kind of pass through to admissions and say like, help me out here and get this kid in, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, there's a set number, but obviously the admissions and being a student athlete, there's always, you know, kind of parameters where maybe they could, you know, if your SAT, it's kind of like a sliding scale. If your SAT is a little bit higher, they might be able to waver on your GPA a little bit. If your GPA is really high, maybe they'd be able to waver on your SAT a little bit. But yeah, it's very competitive. Like I said, there's, you know, schools are admissions based also, and they, you know, they want to keep their rankings of, you know, schools. I think at least back then they used to get ranked on, you know, their acceptance rate. You know, the higher their acceptance rate is, the lower their prestige of their school's going to be.
Yeah.
So if you're talking, you want to be an Ivy League student athlete, you better be not only a very elite athlete, you better be in a very elite academic student.
Yeah. And like you said, like, get that stuff, you know, where it needs to be and put the work in so that you don't, like, cause yourself any headaches going through the process. It's hard enough as it is.
Yeah, that's a, you know, the more you could, like you said, make it easier on yourself and being a good student, taking away that aspect of it where, you know, you don't have to worry about not getting accepted to a school, you know, because the worst feeling you want to have is, oh, coach really loves me, I want to play here, but the school won't let me in.
Yeah, it's like you did everything else right, but you missed that one little part.
Yeah, exactly. So now, you know, yeah, everything, all the other, you know, dominoes lined up, but now the last one is, you know, I can't get the school, the admissions department won't let me in the school. And there's nothing as good, if the admissions won't let you in, there's nothing the coach could do.
Yeah, no, it's not, yeah, they're pretty powerless in that sense.
Yeah, the hands are going to be tied. So as much as they might love you, but listen, it's not, they can't get you into the school.
Yeah. You know, moving, you know, in the direction, you know, we went to the, you know, talking about the videos for, you know, highlighting certain things and, you know, making sure that the, you know, the best attributes stand out. And we talked, you know, about the 60, you know, velocity, and now with hitting, you know, we emphasize on exit velocity and things of that nature. Stressing the importance to, you know, any listeners out there who are going through the process to make sure that your measurables are where they need to be and to put the work in to, you know, get them to an appropriate level for, you know, where you're trying to play, right? Like, too many, I think, neglect that and just want to showcase right away.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned showcase because it kind of goes hand in hand. I mean, showcases are big and they're great opportunities, but in the same sense, they could be non-productive if players don't do their homework on them. So first, with you know, if you're going to go to showcase and that's the route you're going to go and you're going to go showcase heavy, which people do, they invest a lot of money in going to showcases, all different areas. Do your homework on the showcases. If you're a Division II player, Division III player, and you're going to a showcase that has 40 schools going there and 35 of them are Division I schools, that's probably not the best investment and best spent money that you're going to make. It goes back to that keyword of self, you know, being honest with yourself, self-evaluation. Know what kind of player you are. Know what kind of schools or you're going to be attractive to. And it goes back to also honing, like you said, advancing your attributes. If you're going to a showcase, what are you showcasing? If you know, you got to be able to run a 7 flat 60, you know, or pretty close to it. Obviously, anything under 7 is, you know, going to be looked at as a bonus, as a good thing. You're a pitcher, right-handers, you know, 80 miles per hour at least normally is kind of the threshold. Obviously, as you go up higher in the levels, the higher that number is going to go up to 82, 84, 87. Lefties have a little more flexibility in a sense where, you know, because lefties are pretty highly pursued. But same thing, Division I level, lefty, you need to be sitting mid-80s. You know, then obviously you work your way down to 77, 80, 82. But train those things. You know, if you're going to go to showcases, train to hone and advance your skills that you're going to be expected to showcase.
Make sure you actually have something to showcase, yeah.
Exactly. If you're a position player, know how to take a good round of BP if you're going to showcases. You know, at least go through it, know what's going to be expected for you at BP, and work on your swing. Work on driving the baseball. Guys don't go to showcases where you're just going to take BP rounds. Coaches don't want to see you slapping the ball through the infield. They want to see you driving a baseball. So work on it. Work on your swing. Perfect your craft. Like you said, when you go to a showcase, you're actually showcasing things. And I think that's kind of where, unfortunately, a lot of kids fall into. Like you said, they play on travel teams, they play on club teams, but they don't truly focus on developing their skill set. So when they go to showcase, out of 100 kids, there's going to be 70 kids, 80 kids, all thrown 77 to 80 miles per hour, all running 7.2s to 7.6s.
Yeah.
So then what happens is you get lost in a shuffle.
Yeah, for sure.
So you want to be in that upper 20% of a showcase, upper 10% of a showcase.
With at least one of the things. Wise. Right? Like, yeah. at least run a good 60 that stands out, or throw, you know, 85 plus on the outfield or whatever it is. Have something that stands out.
Yeah, you want to catch the attention of the coaches that are there. So I think that's a big factor with your attributes, making sure if you're going to showcases, you have skill set to showcase. And the big part also, like I said before, do your homework on showcases. Don't just show up to a showcase because they say 100 schools are going to be there. Do your homework on what schools are actually going to be there. Do they fit, like I said earlier, or do they check all the boxes? Or at least, I tell my guys, at least try to make 20% of the schools, 30% of the schools that are going, fit what you might be looking for in a school. That way, at least you know, hey, if I get to directly work out in front of 5 schools, 6 schools, 7 schools that I would be really interested in, if they were interested in me, then it's worth your investment. But if that number comes out, there's only really, like, realistically one school that could be a fit for you, athletically, academically, and what you're looking for in a school, out of 20, out of 40, it's probably not worth the $200, $300 you're going to spend to go there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just like, for example, you know, you sit down, like, a guy sits down with you and says, you know, you put your list together, you kind of peg them as like a D2, D3 guy, like maybe, you know, some things fall their way, they can play at a low D1, and they're going to a showcase with Power 5 schools. It's like, what are you, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, you're wasting your time.
And your money.
You know, listen, yeah, as I say, if money's not an issue and you have the money to burn, then you want the experience or maybe the chance that, you know, a school like that might show you some interest, then you could do it. But once again, I like to preach being realistic to our guys. So we look for showcases that they're going to go to that is going to maximize potential schools that fit their skill set and everything else that goes into it. And I think that's fair. And I like to be fair and think that's fair from the school side as well. I mean, if I'm, you know, Caldwell University, use them because we know them, a D2 program, small D2 program in Caldwell, New Jersey, I don't want to go to a showcase where every kid there is throwing 95 miles per hour.
Yeah.
I know I'm probably not getting those kids.
Yeah. Right? It works both ways for sure, yeah.
There's going to be kids there that are going to fit the skill set that goes into what I'm looking for. And so I think, you know, schools, you know, would appreciate that too if it's, you know, kids are realistic and go to the proper events that they should be.
Yeah. It's just like, it's interesting. Like, you don't even really think of that, you know, it works the same for the schools too. Like, they're not going to waste their time. You know, a D3 school is not going to go down to Florida at a, you know, top 100 where lefties are throwing 96. Like, it does nothing for them.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to spend their, you know, I guess that goes back to programs, you know, they have recruiting budgets, but depending on the school and the level, you know, they're not going to wipe out their whole recruiting budget to go down to, like you said, a Power 100 showcase in Florida where they know they're most likely not going to get any kids participate in that showcase.
Yeah. So let's, I guess, move into, you know, we're through the phase, we have some interest, you know, we're the phase of getting some exposure and getting noticed, and we have some interest, and now, you know, we started to communicate with some coaches. What are some, like, absolute no-nos in terms of, like, what you don't want to do when you're talking to coaches as an athlete? Like, what are some things you really want to avoid?
Well, one, you want to avoid your parents or writing the email for you. College coaches or talking on the phone for you or whatever the case may be. It goes back to what we talked briefly about earlier. They're recruiting you. They could tell when a parent or advisor writes the email for you. They're expecting an email or some kind of conversation with a 15, 16-year-old kid, 17-year-old kid. They're going to be able to tell pretty quickly if they're talking to that kid or not. So that's a big one. You know, make sure the communication is legit and genuine. You know, don't copy. If you're, it's the first communication you're having with schools, make sure you're not copying and pasting a generic email that you sent out to 50 schools that night. You know, kind of, you know, make it personalized, you know, talk about their program, what might interest you for that specific school. Make sure you know, you obviously don't just write coach and start the email, you know, yeah. Be specific, coach, you know, so-and-so.
Proofread.
Yeah. And genuine. Yeah. I mean, grammar mistakes, you know, all that simple stuff that, you take for granted sometimes goes a long way. When, once again, you're competing for maybe one roster spot with another recruit, you know, they're going to compare the two. All right. Who's more mature, who's more developed in, you know, just the social skills of it. My biggest thing is make sure your mailbox. One of my biggest things is on your cell phone. Make sure your mailbox, your voicemail is set up and it's not full. I can't tell you how many times college coaches, would, you know, whether it's just conversation or guys that we've worked with, you go, dude, I'm trying to reach your guy. I can't even leave him a voicemail so he knows it's me calling him because his voicemail is not set up where it's full. So you know, if you're a student athlete, make sure, you know, your voicemail set up and a nice voicemail. Don't have, you know, Drake blasted in the voicemail when, you know, when a college coach calls you. I mean, it's funny, and, you know, we joke about it a lot, this stuff we hear.
You'd be surprised.
Again, like we said earlier, be professional. You know, you're selling yourself.
Yeah. Like, as a businessman, I wouldn't want to have, you know, my voicemail box full if a client's trying to reach me. Like, a new client's trying to get into train, let's just say. I wouldn't want to have a, you know, full voicemail box because I would never be able to get in touch with them. It works the same way for the kids.
No, exactly. And, you know, another big thing that, you know, I think falls into, you know, gets passed by a lot by accident is when you sign up for tournaments on your club team. And, you know, obviously those tournament rosters get promoted out to schools and coaches. Make sure the email, the phone number associated with that roster is not your parents. Because obviously your parents are most likely to be the ones filling them out with your club team or whatever, or they signed up with your club team with their information. Just make sure any kind of recruited information that you're at a tournament or showcase is all your information. They, when they're recruiting you, they want to talk to you. They don't want to talk to your parents like we talked about earlier.
That's yeah. Yeah,
they don't want
sure.
to reach out to you. They're going to want to call your cell phone. They're going to want to text your cell phone. They're going to want to email you. So just make sure all that information is the athletes, not the parents.
Yeah. It's just great points overall. It's just like such things that seem so simple, but, you know, they really can be helpful because, like, they're not done by a lot of people.
Yeah.
You can, you know, stand out. You could stand out just from, you know, handling yourself the right way with a coach, and it goes a long way for sure.
Yeah, like I'll give you a quick example of talking about that. One of our players was getting recruited by a Division II school, went on a visit recently because of some things with his parents, you know, job and stuff like that, some family stuff. They weren't going to be able to make the visit, so what this kid lives in New Jersey, was going out to a school in New York. After a high school game, got in his car, drove out to the school by himself, did a tour by himself, and the response he got from the coach is, that's a mature young man.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it. The fact that, you know, he easily could have texted and said, hey, mommy, daddy can't make it. So we're going to have to reschedule. No, he felt, you know, he followed through on the commitment and said, I'll go and see it for myself. He took the ownership of, you know, still following through on it and showing he's mature enough to handle, you know, that situation. So that held a lot of weight with that specific school.
Yeah, that's
so,
like, that's awesome.
You do little stuff like that and you show you know, you're in control of the situation as a student athlete and you're
accountable.
You're kind of and you're kind of directing the ship in a sense. You know, colleges, you know, college coaches like that as well.
Yeah. That's a great kind of story to finish up on, that just like, you know, what are you doing to, you know, separate yourself? And it's like little character things can go a long way.
Yeah. Characters, probably the biggest attribute that's going to get recruited, and it can go a long way.
Yeah. You know, leaving, you know, off with maybe, you know, anything that you would like to add, any, you know, things you think we missed. I mean, we've covered a lot, but any major things that you want to leave any listeners with?
Yeah, my biggest thing was, you know, like we talked about earlier, the mad rush for D1 or just to be committed in general. Stay patient. Everyone's experience and process is different. So don't just rush to commit and because other people are committing. Stay the course, you know, stay the process. I'll get a lot of times, it's July of my junior to senior year. It must be too late. The parents come to me. I said, no, you're fine. You're right where you need to be. Everyone develops as an athlete at different times. Everyone peaks at different times. Situations arise. You get seen at different times. So worry about your own process. Don't get caught up in comparing yourself. Even if your eyes, you think you're a better player than so-and-so and they're committing or talking to schools, just stay the course, trust what you're doing. And more times than not, it'll work out in the long run.
Yeah. It's great. You know, just really want to thank you for coming on. This is, you know, the first episode that I've done in, you know, specifically related to recruiting. And I think it's something that's super important that, you know, hopefully a lot of the young athletes and some of the parents maybe too that listen can, you know, get some benefit out of. So thank you for coming on. I think that was great.
No, I appreciate you having me on.
I look forward to, you know, seeing some feedback on this and maybe having you on again in the future. So thanks again.
No problem.
Thank you for listening to the Muscles and Management podcast brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jerry DiFilippo, helping you build your body and your business.